Attorney General Barr has just informed us that he will not attend tomorrow's hearing.
Attorney General William Barr is refusing to testify before the House Judiciary Committee today about the Mueller report. The Department of Justice announced the news on Wednesday evening after Attorney General Barr had spent the day being alternately grilled by Democrats and lauded by Republicans during his testimony before the Senate Judiciary.
Would you accept them recommending a charging decision to you if they had not reviewed the evidence?
Well, that's a question for Bob Mueller. He's the U.S. attorney.
And you slandered this man from top to bottom. So if you want more of this, you're not going to get it. If you want to ask him questions, you can't.
President essentially tries to change the lawyer's account in order to prevent criticism of himself.
Well, that's not a crime.
Thank you for agreeing to help restore the department's reputation as an impartial arbiter of the law.
Are the president's actions detailed in this report consistent with his oath of office and the requirement in the Constitution that he take care that the laws be faithfully executed?
Is what consistent with that?
But the reason Bill Barr is not here today is because the Democrats decided they didn't want him here today.
The administration cannot dictate the terms of our hearing in our hearing room.
The Democrats on the House Judiciary had wanted to bring in staff lawyers to question Barr, but the Justice Department said they objected to that format, which is rare, but does have precedent. Several Senate Democrats told Barr on Wednesday that he should resign over his handling of the release of the Mueller report. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we start today on The Takeaway. I have two voices with me to talk about Barr's refusal to testify and to give us some historical context on this moment. Chara Torres-Spellacy is a professor of law at Stetson University, and Quinta Jurecic is managing editor of Lawfare. So glad to have you both with us. Quinta, let's start with you. Big news yesterday from Attorney General Barr. What was his reason for not testifying?
Well, he felt that, you know, he'd sort of, it seems the way the Justice Department presented it, that he sort of said everything that he could have possibly said to the Senate and didn't really feel the need to be grilled again by the House of Representatives. And I think that's representative of the posture he really took before the Senate, where he seemed even contemptuous, I would say, of some of the Democratic questioning. And you can see why that sort of manifests in this refusal to come before the House today.
And Quinta, what message is this sending? What broader message could this be sending from the administration?
Again, I think contempt is a good word, you know. I think it's consistent with the administration's recent tactics of basically stonewalling and refusing to give the House anything at all. The message is really, you know, we don't accept your power as a coordinate branch of government. And I think that there are circumstances under which the attorney general might refuse to come testify that wouldn't send that message, perhaps. But along with his performance yesterday, which was really sort of sneering, I think that comes through loud and clear today.
Chara, we should note here that you are a former staffer for Democratic Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, but you have also studied constitutional law. I'm wondering, is there a historical precedent for this move by AG Barr?
Well, as I write in my new book, Political Brands, this administration is one of unreliable narrators, and Bill Barr has joined that group in full force, and you saw that in his testimony in the Senate yesterday. And I guess what I would say is Barr is like a chef that you catch in the bathroom who doesn't wash his hands. And after you see that, you don't want to eat what comes out of the kitchen. And except that the kitchen is now the Department of Justice. And so there are historical precedents of attorneys general stonewalling. For example, Nixon's Attorney General John Mitchell had 3 days of testimony where he basically stonewalled, and it didn't go well for him. In the end, he was actually tried and convicted for obstruction of justice.
Could that be a scenario that happens here, Quinta?
In Barr's case, I will leave that to the historians. I will say that the House has been making noises about holding him in contempt of Congress. I would say I'm not sure if they'll follow through on that, just because the mechanics of how that works are actually pretty complicated. Namely, that when the House holds someone in contempt, it's usually, not always, the executive branch who has to enforce that. And if the Justice Department, you know, doesn't want to bring contempt proceedings against its own attorney general, it's not going to. So it gets pretty hairy pretty fast.
Chara, you've also, talking about the historical points here, you've also mentioned two specific moments in U.S. history. One was Watergate, and the second was, or should we say the first, was the Teapot Dome scandal of the 1920s. Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but remind us what happened in that scandal.
So in Teapot Dome, you had a Secretary of the Interior give a private company oil rights. The oil rights was in Teapot Dome, Wyoming, hence the name of the scandal. And it looks like that private entity gave the then Secretary of the Interior $100,000 for these privileges, which are on public lands and belong to the American people. And there were lots of different investigations into Teapot Dome that were done by Congress. And one of the questions was, how did the Secretary of the Interior become so rich so fast? And another side question was, why didn't Harding's Attorney General prosecute the Secretary of the Interior? So it's not entirely analogous to our current situation, but one of the things that came out of Teapot Dome was a fight over getting the brother of the Harding Attorney General to testify before Congress. And they actually sent out the sergeant at arms and arrested him in Ohio. And then he contests his arrest because he says, basically, Congress doesn't have the right to arrest me. And that goes up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court says, actually, Congress does have the right to arrest you if you refuse a lawful congressional subpoena to appear.
So in this case, I mean, I want to go back a little bit to the letter here that was initially at issue. Quinta, at one point yesterday, Barr referred to the letter as, quote, snitty, and he said he thinks it was, quote, written by one of Mueller's staff people. What was your take on Barr's characterization of that? Because one thing that keeps coming out is if Mueller wanted to communicate something to Barr, he could have easily done so without putting it in writing.
Exactly. And I think for that reason, it is notable that it was put in writing. And while I certainly wouldn't characterize it as snitty, and I don't think there's any need or any reason to think that it was written by a staff member, I think Barr may be responding to something there when he perhaps feels a little taken aback, perhaps, by that letter. If you read it, it reads as very polite. But in the context of sort of how things are done in the Department of Justice, to memorialize on paper your objections to functionally what Mueller's superior has done here is a really, really big step. It's especially a big step in this context because, you know, Barr and Mueller knew each other before this. Barr has described them as friends. And, you know, Mueller has been silent for this entire investigation. This is the first thing that we've seen from him that is not an indictment or a criminal complaint. And I think it really underlines how dissatisfied and perhaps disturbed Mueller was by how Barr handled the rollout of the report.
And we also, in talking about the rollout of the report and also just Barr's, Mueller's concern, the way Barr is characterizing Mueller's concerns, he is saying that it's primarily about how the media handled the summary. Chara, does that make sense to you?
Well, I have Mueller's letter in front of me, and this is not about the media getting it wrong. Mueller says to Barr, your four-page summary letter that Barr gave to Congress did not fully capture the context, nature, and substance of this office, as in the special counsel's office, work and conclusions. And anyone who read the four-page Barr letter and then compared it to the actual 400-page Mueller report would agree with Mueller's assessment there. There was a huge difference between the four-page memo and the report, and it was not just a matter of length, it was a matter of substance. And one of the things that I think has been sort of misunderstood is why Bob Mueller did not indict Trump for obstruction of justice. And the reason that he gave in his own report is longstanding DOJ rules say that you cannot indict a sitting president. And I think Mueller, being a honorable person, did not want to accuse the president when that could not be resolved in a court of law where you'd have the adversarial process.
I want to focus a little bit on the Democrats here, because there is we've mentioned this yesterday on the show before the testimony, that there's a very contentious relationship here between Barr and congressional Democrats. What is how concerning should that be, Chara?
Well, I'm less concerned about, a reaction to the Democrats. I mean, I think it's sort of par for the course that the opposing party, when you have a congressional hearing, is going to be harder on you as a witness than the people on your own team.
Are they being hard enough?
I, of course, am. I no longer work for the Senate. That was 20 years ago. I think there are a certain number of steps that could be taken, which they are trying to do. They are trying to get a unredacted copy of the Mueller report. They're trying to get the president's taxes from the IRS. They're trying to get some of his bank transactions from Deutsche Bank. They're trying to get his accountants to give up what they have. And once you have all of that material in front of you, then you can make a sensible decision about, is impeachment the right next step?
Chara Torres-Pellacy is a professor of law at Stetson University, and Quinta Jurecic is managing editor of Lawfare. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.